Chapter 122. Recognizant and reflective, among sundry minor alterations in Mr. Carker's life and habits that began to take place at this time, none was more remarkable than the extraordinary diligence with which he applied himself to business, and the closeness with which he investigated every detail that the affairs of the house laid open to him. Always active and penetrating in such matters, his lynx-eyed vigilance now increased 20-fold. Not only did his weary watch keep pace with every present point that every day presented to him in some new form, but in the midst of these engrossing occupations he found leisure, that is, he made it to review the past transactions of the firm, and his share in them, during a long series of years. Frequently, when the clerks were all gone, the offices dark and empty, and all similar places of business shut up, Mr. Carker, with the whole anatomy of the iron room laid bare before him, would explore the mysteries of books and papers, with the patient progress of a man who was dissecting the minutes, nerves and fibers of his subject. Perch, the messenger, who usually remained on these occasions, to entertain himself with the perusal of the price current by the light of one candle, or to doze over the fire in the outer office, at the imminent risk every moment of diving head foremost into the coal box, could not withhold the tribute of his admiration from this zealous conduct, although it much contracted his domestic enjoyments. And again, expatiated to Mrs. Perch, now nursing twins, on the industry and acuteness of their managing gentlemen in the city. The same interest and sharp attention that Mr. Carker bestowed on the business of the house, he applied to his own personal affairs. Though not a partner in the concern, a distinction hitherto reserved solely to inheritors of the great name of Domini, he was in the receipt of some percentage on its dealings, and, participating in all its facilities for the employment of money to advantage, was considered, by the minnows among the tritons of the East, a rich man. It began to be said, among these shrewd observers, that Jem Carker, of Domini's, was looking about him to see what he was worth, and that he was calling in his money at a good time, like the long-headed fellow he was, and bets were even offered on the stock exchange that Jem was going to marry a rich widow. Yet these cares did not in the least interfere with Mr. Carker's watching of his chief, or with his cleanness, neatness, sleekness, or any cat-like quality he possessed. It was not so much that there was a change in him, in reference to any of his habits, as that the whole man was intensified. Everything that had been observable in him before, was observable now, but with a greater amount of concentration. He did each single thing, as if he did nothing else, a pretty certain indication in a man of that range of ability and purpose, that he is doing something which sharpens and keeps alive his keenest powers. The only decided alteration in him was, that as he rode to and fro along the streets, he would fall into deep fits of musing, like that in which he had come away from Mr. Domini's house, on the morning of that gentleman's disaster. At such times, he would keep clear of the obstacles in his way, mechanically, and would appear to see and hear nothing until arrival at his destination, or some sudden chance or effort roused him. Walking his white-legged horse thus, to the counting house of Domini and Son one day, he was as unconscious of the observation of two pairs of women's eyes, as of the fascinated orbs of Rob the Grinder, who, in waiting a street's length from the appointed place, as a demonstration of punctuality, vainly touched and retouched his hat to attract attention, and trotted along on foot, by his master's side, prepared to hold his stirrup when he should alight. "See where he goes!" "Apostrophe, apostrophe!" cried one of these two women, an old creature, who stretched out her shriveled arm to point him out to her companion, a young woman, who stood close beside her, withdrawn like herself into a gateway. Mrs. Brown's daughter looked out at this bidding on the part of Mrs. Brown, and there were wrath and vengeance in her face. "I never thought to look at him again, apostrophe," she said, in a low voice, "but it's well I should, perhaps. I see. I see. Apostrophe, not changed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old woman, with a look of eager malice. He changed. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the other. What for? What has he suffered? There is change enough for 20 in me. Isn't that enough? Apostrophe, see where he goes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, muttered the old woman, watching her daughter with her red eyes. So easy and so trim a horseback, while we are in the mud. Apostrophe, and of it, apostrophe, said her daughter impatiently. We are mud, underneath his horse's feet. What should we be? Apostrophe, and the intentness with which she looked after him again, she made a hasty gesture with her hand, when the old woman began to reply, as if her view could be obstructed by mere sound. Her mother, watching her, and not him, remained silent, until her kindling glance subsided, and she drew a long breath, as if in the relief of his being gone. Dearie, apostrophe, apostrophe, said the old woman then. Alice, handsome gall alive. Apostrophe, she gently shook her sleeve to arouse her attention. Will you let him go like that, when you can wring money from him? Why, it's a wickedness, my daughter. Apostrophe, haven't I told you, that I will not have money from him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she returned. And don't you yet believe me? Did I take his sister's money? Would I touch a penny, if I knew it, that had gone through his white hands unless it was, indeed, that I could poison it, and send it back to him? Peace, mother, and come away. And him so rich? Apostrophe, apostrophe, murmured the old woman. And us so poor. Apostrophe, poor in not being able to pay him any of the harm we owe him, apostrophe, returned her daughter. Let him give me that sort of riches, and I'll take them from him, and use them. Come away. It's no good looking at his horse. Come away, mother. Apostrophe, but the old woman, for whom the spectacle of Rob the Grinder returning down the street, leading the riderless horse, appeared to have some extraneous interest that it did not possess in itself, surveyed that young man with the utmost earnestness, and seeming to have whatever doubts she entertained, resolved as he drew near, glanced at her daughter with brightened eyes, and with her finger on her lip, and emerging from the gateway at the moment of his passing, touched him on the shoulder. Why, where's my sprightly Rob been, all this time? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, as he turned round. The sprightly Rob, whose sprightliness was very much diminished by the salutation, looked exceedingly dismayed, and said, with the water rising in his eyes, oh, why can't you leave a poor cove alone, Mrs. Brown, when he's getting an honest livelihood and conducting himself respectable? What do you come and deprive a cove of his character for, by talking to him in the streets, when he's taking his master's horse to a honest stable, a horse you'd go and sell for cats and dogs' meat, if you had your way? Why, I thought, apostrophe, said the grinder, producing his concluding remark, as if it were the climax of all his injuries, that he was dead long ago. Apostrophe, apostrophe, this is the way, apostrophe, cried the old woman, appealing to her daughter, that he talks to me, who knew him weeks and months together, my dearie, and have stood his friend many and many a time among the pigeon-fancying tramps and bird-catchers. Apostrophe, let the birds be, will you, Mrs. Brown? Apostrophe, apostrophe, retorted Rob, in a tone of the acutest anguish. I think a cove had better have to do with lions than them little creatures, for they're always flying back in your face, when you least expect it. Well, how do you do, and what do you want? Apostrophe, apostrophe, these polite inquiries the grinder uttered, as it were under protest, and with great exasperation and vindictiveness. Hark how he speaks to an old friend, my dearie. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Brown, again appealing to her daughter. But there's some of his old friends, not so patient as me. If I was to tell some that he knows, and has spotted and cheated with, where to find him, apostrophe, will you hold your tongue, Mrs. Brown? Apostrophe, apostrophe, interrupted the miserable grinder, glancing quickly round, as though he expected to see his master's teeth shining at his elbow. What do you take a pleasure in ruining a cove for? At your time of life too. When you ought to be thinking of a variety of things. Apostrophe apostrophe, what a gallant horse. Apostrophe apostrophe, said the old woman, patting the animal's neck. Let him alone, will you, Mrs. Brown? Apostrophe apostrophe, cried Rob, pushing away her hand. You're enough to drive a penitent cove mad. Apostrophe, why, what hurt do I do him, child? Apostrophe apostrophe, returned the old woman. Hurt? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Rob. He's got a master that would find it out if he was touched with a straw. Apostrophe, and he blew upon the place where the old woman's hand had rested for a moment and smoothed it gently with his finger as if he seriously believed what he said. The old woman, looking back to mumble and mouth at her daughter, who followed, kept close to Rob's heels as he walked on with the bridle in his hand, and pursued the conversation. A good place, Rob, eh? Apostrophe apostrophe, said she. You're in luck, my child. Apostrophe, oh don't talk about luck, Mrs. Brown, apostrophe, returned the wretched grinder, facing round and stopping. If you'd never come, or if you'd go away, then indeed a cove might be considered tolerable lucky. Can't you go along, Mrs. Brown, and not foller me? Apostrophe apostrophe, blubbered Rob, with sudden defiance. If the young woman's a friend of yours, why don't she take you away, instead of letting you make yourself so disgraceful? Apostrophe apostrophe, what? Apostrophe apostrophe, croaked the old woman, putting her face close to his, with a malevolent grin upon it that puckered up the loose skin down in her very throat. Do you deny your old chum? Have you lurked to my house 50 times, and slept sound in a corner, when you had no other bed but the paving stones, and do you talk to me like this? Have I bought and sold with you, and helped you in my way of business, schoolboy, sneak, and whatnot, and do you tell me to go along? Could I raise a crowd of old company about you tomorrow morning, that would follow you to ruin like copies of your own shadow, and do you turn on me with your bold looks? I'll go. Come, Alice. Apostrophe, stop, Mrs. Brown. Apostrophe apostrophe, cried the distracted grinder. What are you doing of? Don't put yourself in a passion. Don't let her go, if you please. I haven't meant any offense. I said, how do you do, at first, didn't I? But you wouldn't answer. How you do? Besides, apostrophe, said Rob piteously, look here. How can a cove stand talking in the street with his master's prady wanting to be took to be rubbed down, and his master up to every individual thing that happens? Apostrophe apostrophe, the old woman made a show of being partially appeased, but shook her head, and mouthed and muttered still. Come along to the stables, and have a glass of something that's good for you, Mrs. Brown, can't you? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Rob, instead of going on, like that, which is no good to you, nor anybody else. Come along with her, will you be so kind? Apostrophe apostrophe, said Rob. I'm sure I'm delighted to see her, if it wasn't for the horse. Apostrophe apostrophe, with this apology, Rob turned away, a rueful picture of despair, and walked his charge down a by street. The old woman, mouthing at her daughter, followed close upon him. The daughter followed. Turning into a silent little square courtyard that had a great church tower rising above it, and a packer's warehouse, and a bottle maker's warehouse, for its places of business, Rob the grinder delivered the white-legged horse to the hostler of a quaint stable at the corner, and inviting Mrs. Brown and her daughter to seat themselves upon a stone bench at the gate of that establishment, soon reappeared from a neighboring public house with a pewter measure and a glass. Here's Master Mr. Carker, child. Apostrophe apostrophe, said the old woman, slowly, as her sentiment before drinking. Lord bless him. Apostrophe, why, I didn't tell you who he was, apostrophe, observed Rob, with staring eyes. We know him by sight, apostrophe, said Mrs. Brown, whose working mouth and nodding head stopped for the moment in the fixedness of her attention. We saw him pass this morning, afore he got off his horse, when you were ready to take it. " returned Rob, appearing to wish that his readiness had carried him to any other place. "What's the matter with her? Won't she drink?" This inquiry had reference to Alice, who, folded in her cloak, sat a little apart, profoundly inattentive to his offer of the replenished glass. The old woman shook her head. "Don't mind her," she said. "She's a strange creature, if you know her, Rob." "But Mr. Carker, hush!" said Rob, glancing cautiously up at the packers, and at the bottle makers, as if, from any one of the tiers of warehouses, Mr. Carker might be looking down. "Softly. Why, he ain't here." cried Mrs. Brown. "I don't know that," muttered Rob, whose glance even wandered to the church tower, as if he might be there, with a supernatural power of hearing. "Good master?" inquired Mrs. Brown. Rob nodded, and added, in a low voice, "Precious sharp. Lives out of town, don't he, Lovey?" said the old woman. "When he's at home," returned Rob. "But we don't live at home just now."
"Where then?"
asked the old woman. "Lodgings, up near Mr. Dombey's," returned Rob. The younger woman fixed her eyes so searchingly upon him, and so suddenly, that Rob was quite confounded, and offered the glass again, but with no more effect upon her than before. "Mr. Dombey, you and I used to talk about him, sometimes, you know," said Rob to Mrs. Brown. "You used to get me to talk about him." The old woman nodded. "Well, Mr. Dombey, he's had a fall from his horse," said Rob, unwillingly, "and my master has to be up there, more than usual, either with him, or Mrs. Dombey, or some of 'em, and so we've come to town."
"Are they good friends, Lovey?"
Asked the old woman.
"Who?"
Retorted Rob.
"He and she?"
"What, Mr. and Mrs. Dombey?" Said Rob.
"How should I know?"
"Not the master and Mrs. Dombey, chick," replied the old woman, coaxingly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.